So this guy is powerful. He's over 127 kingdoms. King Ahasuerus. So you probably can't see this, but just to tell you where he reigns. He is over modern-day countries. Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Israel, Lebanon, some former Soviet Union countries, all those stands over there, parts of Egypt, Bulgaria, Greece, and India. Powerful guy. He also, we read in there about the Medes and the Persians. They had this thing called the Law of the Medes and the Persians. Once you write that down, you can't reverse it. So we'll see that that comes into the story as well. The other thing about this province is when the Law of the Medes and Persians is passed, they have to send out Pony Express kind of deal in all these different languages. So he's going to have a cabinet bureau somewhere that translates things into all these different languages. Kind of figures into the story. There's your first character, Ahasuerus. We know him. The second one is Esther, this young Jewish girl, orphaned. She's being raised by her older cousin Mordecai. She's a beautiful young woman. She trusts in God. She is a Jew, but she doesn't identify herself as a Jew. And as I said, she's going to be the hinge that this part of human history swings on. Then you have Mordecai. He is her older cousin. He raises her as his daughter. He's a government official. He works in the government of King Ahasuerus. And he raises his daughter, and he shares some Jewish tradition with her. And then you got this guy, the snidely whiplash of the story, this guy named Haman. If it helps, you can remember him as Hangman, because how it figures into the story. He is he's a bad guy. He's basically under satanic influence. So, I got four people up there. Who's the fifth main character in the story? This is not a trick question. God. There you go. Okay. All right. Now, if you have a seatbelt, put it on. Because we're going to move. Okay, so we know that they're in the king. Okay. Well, let me just move forward here. Here's this deal, and I don't want you to lose track of this. Right here, he's going to throw a feast. That's in the third year of the reign of King Ahasuerus. He's on a war footing. Then we're going to have a beauty pageant here that goes on for 3 to 4 years. Okay? This is not Miss America contest on ABC in one night, right? Then right here, this red block in the seventh year of his reign, he winds up losing a war. So you have over here, the Persian Empire is declining, the Greek Empire is increasing, and then in his 12th year of his reign is when she goes into, y'all know, if I perish, I perish. The reason I put that up there is that this is going to unfold over years. But at the end of the story, it's going to happen in a matter of hours. And so when you read the book of Esther, God's providence is patient. He works on his time frame, not ours. Okay. Oh, so here we go. On the seventh day, we're in verse 10 of chapter 1. On the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded, guys' names I can't pronounce, who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king wearing her royal crown, in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused. She didn't want to be trotted out there in front of all these guys. So king gets really mad, and he tries to figure out, what shall we do? Verse 15, what shall we do to Queen Vashti according to the law, because she did not obey the king? So these guys come up with this great plan, and they're saying, if Queen Vashti doesn't obey the king, all the other women aren't going to obey their husbands either. We've got a problem. So here's what you do. Verse 17, for the queen's behavior will become known to all women, so that they will despise their husbands in their eyes, and they will when they report, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought, and so on and so on. So what he does is he writes a law, royal decree, in verse 19, go out from him and let it be recorded in the laws of the Medes and the Persians, can't be reversed, so that it will be altered, that Vashti won't come before the king anymore. And he's going to give her place to another. Okay, so that's the feast right here, right, the third year of his reign. Okay, so these guys come up with this great plan for the queen. King, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go over these 127 provinces. We're going to find the most beautiful women we can. We're going to bring them in here, and we're going to pick a new queen for you. So he wakes up and he goes, what did I do? I did what to Vashti? Oh, boy, that's probably a dumb decision. So you got this plan now? Oh, okay, I can live with that. So they start bringing all these women from 127 provinces in. Verse chapter 2, after these things, when the wrath of the king subsided, he remembered Vashti, what he had done. The king's servants who attended him said, let all these beautiful women be brought in. They're going to be put under the care of this guy named Haggai. Then what they're going to do is let beauty preparations be given them. Let the young woman who pleases the king be the queen instead of Vashti. Okay. So what happens is that they start bringing all these women in. Right here, this beauty pageant is going to go on for 3 to 4 years. Like I say, when you're reading this and you pay attention to the years of reign, this thing is going on for a while. So Vashti's out, they got to find this new queen. Anyway, we're introduced to Mordecai. Verse 2, let the king's servants who attend him say, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces, kingdoms, to gather these beautiful young virgins to Shushan. So they're bringing them into the capital city and put them in a woman's quarters, and Haggai, the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and let beauty preparations be given to them. Then let the young women who please the king be queen instead of Vashti. Okay, and in Shushan there was this man named Mordecai in verse 7, and Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she neither had father nor mother. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. So in verse 8, so it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and there were many young women, and gathered at the Shushan, the citadel, under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace. Now these young ladies were placed into this beauty pageant. They get to go to Club Med for a year. And they get beauty treatments and special treatment for a year. And the way it works out is that when it was time for a young woman to go, this is kind of graphic, but when it was time for the young woman to go to the king, she would go for one night. And if she pleased the king, he would call her back. If not, she's done. Got one chance to get it right. So this beauty pageant is going on for years. Verse 13, thus prepared, you know, after they've had a year's worth of Club Med, thus prepared, each woman went into the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarter to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the custody of these guys, so she would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called her by name. All right, verse 15, what we start to read there is that Esther finds favor in the eyes of this guy that's taking care of all the beauty contest participants. And what we read down, we'll go to verse 15. Now when the turn for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. There's a landmark right there. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in the sight more than all the other virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen. Beauty pageant is over. He's got a queen. Once again, if you look at this, we're 7 years into this reign. 4 years of a beauty pageant, one night with a king, she's the queen. Do you see God's fingerprints on this, that a young Jewish orphan girl in a foreign country becomes queen of a pagan nation? There's a reason for it. All right. Now, let's skip down to 19. Verse 19, chapter 2. When virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now, Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as she was brought up. In those days, when Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now, when you're reading through the Old Testament and you read about a gate, that's like the county courthouse. So this guy is an official in the government. He's sitting at the county courthouse. Verse 21, in those days when Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, this guy named Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious. Why are they furious? They have red black. He just lost a war. So they're going to conduct a coup. So the matter became known to Mordecai, and he told Queen Esther. Mordecai heard about it. How do you hear about it? God's providence. Who does he tell? Esther? No. Queen Esther, who's in the palace, who has the ear of the king. Got it. Okay. So Esther informs the king in Mordecai's name, verse 23, and when the inquiry was made, they find out that these two guys were indeed plotting a coup, and they hang them. And then we read something here at the end of chapter 2. After they were hanged, it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. So you back up to verse 22. So the matter became known to Mordecai, told Queen Esther. Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And it gets written into the Federal Register. I know this is boring, but it's important. So it's right here, the 7th year of his reign. Something gets recorded in the Federal Register, so to speak. And that recordation was that Mordecai, this low-level official in the gate, informed the king that there was a plot to kill him. They found out it was true, and they write it down. Okay. Then we come on the Haman. So Haman is this bad guy, Hangman. And I'll tell you what, I'm just going to kind of skip through here and tell you the story. Haman, very prideful. He advances to the second position in the kingdom. He's the second most powerful guy after the king. And he's very prideful, and he wants everybody to bow down to him. And everybody does, except for Mordecai. And it gets under his skin. He can't deal with it. In fact, he can't deal with it so much that at the end of verse 8, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom. He is so mad at one Jew, this Mordecai guy, that he's going to wipe out the entire Jewish nation in 127 provinces. That's satanic. We've seen that in the last century with Hitler. This guy is like Hitler. He wants to kill all the Jews. All right. In the first month, I'm in verse 7 of chapter 3, in the first month, which is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Azariah, they're going to cast lots. Once again, see right here, this is where the plot was. Kill it. 5 years later, in the 12th year of his reign, we start reading about what Haman's doing. And what's going to happen is that Haman plots a plan to kill all the Jews, and he goes into the king and he says, there's these people that are scattered throughout all your provinces, and they're not the same as all the rest of us. They're very different. They don't listen to your laws. They have their own set of laws. I tell you what, if you will give me the power to do it, I will go out and I'll kill all these people, and I'll bring a lot of money back into the treasury. He's lost a war in the 7th year of his reign. He's not doing international stuff anymore. He's focused internally. So he says to this guy, he said, fine. Make it so, number one, right? Star Trek? So he sends him out to do that. But there's still this thorn under the saddle of Haman. It's called Mordecai. He just can't get it out of his system. So he writes this order, Haman does, after he gets approval from the king. You remember how big the province was? He has it translated, he puts it on the Pony Express, they ride throughout the kingdom, and they deliver it that everybody can kill on a certain day after they cast the lot, Purim. That's where they get the Feast of Purim, however you want to pronounce it, that Jews still celebrate today. It's from this book. that the people throughout the region can kill the Jews. So it's the law of the Medes and Persians, can't be reversed. So he sends them out there. So when he hears about the command in chapter 4, when Mordecai hears, he tears his clothes, puts on sackcloth and ashes outside the king's gate. Esther hears about it in verse 4. She's deeply distressed, tries to get him to wash and change clothes. He won't do it, and he tells her about what's happened, about this decree. And in verse 10 of verse 10 of chapter 4, then Esther spoke to Hathachah and gave his command to Mordecai. All the king's servant and all the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court of the king shall be put to death if he doesn't hold out the golden scepter. So what Mordecai is saying, that she needs to go into the king and tell him what's going on. In Mordecai, after he gets this note from Esther, he replies back in verse 13, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther, do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than any other Jews, for if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Verse 15. Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, go gather the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My mates and I will fast likewise. And so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. Now what happens... After this, Queen Esther goes to the king and invites Haman and the king to a banquet that she's sponsoring. And they come. Meanwhile, Haman's still got this burr under his saddle about the Jews, and he's plotting how he's going to get the king to give him permission to go kill all the Jews. So anyway, they go to the banquet, and Haman's kind of like, man, just me and the king. No, he's living big. And so they go there, and Esther doesn't say, my request, you know, the king says, tell me what you want, up to half the kingdom, I'll do it. He said, I want you to come back for dinner tomorrow. Okay. So, now, this is important. Okay. Right here, she becomes queen. Seventh year. We're in the 12th year. 5 years later. 5 years later. Back here is when Mordecai uncovered the coup. It's written down in the Federal Register, put on a shelf with all the other Federal Registers. 5 years later, during this time period, after the banquet, that night, King can't sleep. So he says, man, bring me Federal Registers. He doesn't say what he said. Go get one from a certain year. They go in there to the Federal this library, grab a book, walk in, give it to the king, and he's reading along, and he says, he reads the part about Mordecai, 5 years previous. And he goes, was anything ever done for Mordecai to show my gratitude? And they go, nope. Never rewarded him. Huh. So that morning, while he's still reading this, he goes, who's out there in the court? It was Haman. And Haman is going to, literally, he's coming in to ask permission to go start killing the Jews, to hang Mordecai that day. And he says, okay, so that's Haman, that's what's in his mind. But the king's sitting there reading about Mordecai, and he thinks, what do I do for him? And he calls Haman in, and Haman says, king asks him, what should I do to honor somebody that I really delight in? And Haman's going, it's me. He wants to honor me. And he comes up with a scheme. Oh, you ought to put the robe that you've worn on him. You ought to put him on a horse that you've ridden on. You ought to put a crown on his head, and you ought to have somebody marching through the city proclaiming what a great guy he is. And the king goes, great idea. Why don't you take care of that? Take care of Mordecai out there. And can you imagine how deflated he was? This guy that he wanted to kill, that he hated, he's going to have to trot him through the city singing his praises. So when all that's all over with, Haman goes home, lays on his wife's lap, bawling his eyeballs out, saying, well, look what happened. And his wife warns him. He said, if he's a Jew, you're not going to prevail against him. So while he's crying there, the king's attendants go in there, grab Haman, say, it's time to go to the banquet. Cleans up his eyes, and he goes to the banquet. Well, at the banquet, same deal. What do you want, Esther? I'll give you up to half the kingdom. And she says, don't let me die. He's going, what are you talking about? That you die. There's a man that wants to kill me and all the Jews. Who is this guy? It's Haman. In 24 hours, after 5 years, they go by and find the book, pull it out, open it up. He reads about Mordecai 5 years later. Now it's disclosed. In 24 hours, Haman goes from wanting to hang Mordecai to being hung on the gallows he built. The providence of God in that. Not only that, before they kill Haman, you know what they do? They take off the signet ring off Haman and put it on Mordecai's finger. He trades places. Now, why is the book of Esther important? The providence of God. That's why I get a little weird about the whole timeline thing here is. But you need to understand that God works differently than we do. His ways are not our ways. His thoughts are not our thoughts. We may think that this is dragging on way too long. But he was able to, over a span of 10 years, crazy beauty pageant, losing wars, this massive canvas of world history with these powerful nations, to raise up a Jewish orphan Jewish girl to change human history. Over years this thing unfolded, 5 years from when it was written down, to change history, to pull it off one night when he can't sleep, to switch places from the man that hated, wanted to kill the Jews, to a man who was Jewish who would save the Jews. Now, how do you explain that? The only way you explain that is God. So, we are pretty much out of time. It's always a big challenge to try and cover 10 chapters in about 50 minutes. But my hope is simply this, that you gained a certain appreciation for this book of Esther and God's providence. So the things we can take away from it, the lessons we can learn, is that in the midst of world history, God is working. I don't know about you, but I'm not too crazy about what's going on in the United States these days. Fine. God's still at work. Doesn't matter what I think. God uses the weak things to confound the wise and the powerful. A little orphan girl living in a foreign country, Jewish, is elevated to queen status in this pagan nation and changes the course of human history. Just because God's name isn't mentioned in this book doesn't mean that he's not at work. He is. You can go through, I did, I put GP all in the margins, God's providence, where things are happening. I challenge you to do that too. It's everywhere. His fingerprints are everywhere. And then this idea of God being a brinksman, that is, he'll bring you to the edge of yourself where you've got nothing else to rely on but God. You've exhausted all your resources, all your mental capacity, all your physical energy, and all you've got left is God. He'll bring you to your breaking point. Why does he do that? So he gets the glory. So, any rate, I apologize that it was a little bit more than probably should have tried to tackle in an hour. But my hope is simply this, that you have an appreciation for the book of Esther, if you remember nothing else, God's providence, that he's at work. So, all right, thank you for your attention. Heavenly Father, we do thank you for your word, and that if we take the time to sit down and study, that we can see how you move in the affairs of men, how nations are raised up and taken down, and that nobody can stand in a prideful position before you. But you're willing to work with the weak things to execute what you need to have done in this life of ours. So we submit to you and ask that you guide and direct us as we give thanks for this time together through your Son. Amen.